Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Catholic Singles. Every day, hundreds of Catholic singles join CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love. Breadbox Media listeners get 20% off by using the promo code BREADBOX when they register. Come be our next success story at CatholicSingles.com. Looking for a way to build daily prayer discipline? Seen the rise in mindfulness meditation, but not sure if it is possible to meditate in a way that's consistent with your Catholic faith? Just looking for a way to breathe new life into your existing prayer routine? No matter what you're looking for, Hollow is here to help. Hollow is a Catholic prayer and meditation app that helps users deepen their relationship with God through audio-guided contemplative prayer sessions. From meditations on the daily gospel, to the rosary, to daily examines, Hollow has something for everyone. Hollow is the number one Catholic app in the U.S. It is free to download and has permanently free content, but you can also check out all of the premium sessions for 30 days, risk-free, by signing up at www.hollow.app/breadbox.
So, Adam, you've never been to Rome.
I know.
I keep telling you, you have to drop what you're doing and go.
Dude, it's on my bucket list.
It's on the bucket list. I know, man. Look, you've got St. Peter's Basilica. You've got Assisi, which is just a day trip away. I mean, the whole faith is just right there. Around every single corner in Rome is another church that will just blow your mind.
I know. So if you're like me, you want to go to Rome, but you don't know where to begin, check out our show notes. There's a banner that says Select International Tours. Click that banner. They know how to turn your bucket list into reality. They've been doing this for over 30 years, so they know what they're doing. Check it out. That's Select International Tours.
Today, I am here to give you the assurance that I have not forgotten you.
If we want to see the new evangelization become more than just jargon, if we want to see it grow legs and gain traction and change the world, we have got to take seriously our responsibilities as husbands and fathers, and especially as sons of God.
I want to propose to you then that something that our world is desperately in need of in the midst of this crisis is Catholic Christian masculinity.
If you want to be a good father, then bring your children to confession with you.
I can't get there unless I become a man of ascesis, a man of asceticism, a man of training.
A man not doing penance, a man not disciplined, is not a man.
You guys have upped your game.
You know what, guys? I gotta say, I love this concept of Man Show.
Warning: The Catholic Man Show is about to begin.
Welcome to the Catholic Man Show. We're on the Lord's team, the winning side. So raise your glass. Adam Minahan here. Sitting to my right is my best bud, David Niles. To my left is my new best bud, Dave Van Vickel. And to my direct front is a bunch of our friends.
All of our best friends.
All of our best friends from heaven. It's epic. We have a bunch of relics in front of us today that brought to you by Dave Van Vickel. Thanks so much for hanging out with us today.
Yeah,
and bringing a bunch of our friends.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here.
Give a couple, like, what do we got in front of us here?
So we have a couple relics of the Passion. We have a piece of the cross and a piece of the crown of thorns. We have a couple Marian relics, which a lot of people don't even know exists. A piece of her veil and a piece of her belt. And then we've got a few saints here. One of note, Mother Teresa of Calcutta, it's my favorite right there, and Blessed Bartolo Longo. So there's a few there you might recognize.
It's epic.
Yeah.
This is the first, Dave, right?
Yes, for relics on the show?
Yes.
Totally. Yes,
totally. First on the Catholic Man Show. So, Dave, we had a great talk last night that you gave to St. Anne's, over, I don't know, maybe 250, 300 people. Yeah, I don't know how many.
I think it was close to 300.
Yeah.
It was
a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was great.
And
you knocked it out of the park.
Good.
So, if anybody is looking for an excellent speaker to come
just really like destroy the minds of all of your audience in the best way.
Yeah, not destroy, but
just, it's like, forget blowing their minds. It's like, they might just be totally obliterated.
Yeah, but go check them out, Dave Van Bickle. And it's sinnersguide.com.
Yeah, thesinnersguide.com is where my calendar is. So come see me.
Yeah, that'd be great. And we also were able to record the talk, and I think we'll be able to put it up for our patrons, correct?
Of course, yeah.
So if you're a Patreon member, we'll be able to, you'll be able to get that talk here pretty soon as well. So, Dave, any other introduction that we need to do before we, can we like get into the topic, or what do you want to do?
Well, let's just mention what we're drinking.
Okay.
We need to stand on ceremony at least for a minute.
I agree. I'm having an espresso.
Me too.
And you're having a latte.
A latte, but now I feel weird because you guys are having like real manly.
No, I would be doing that too, but I'm lactose intolerant, so.
I had one already this morning, so.
Yeah, sure.
I did. It
does make me feel better.
Haley made me a latte this morning.
I'm just not manly. The milk is just too much for me.
So typically what we do on the Catholic Man Show is we open and review a beverage. We highlight some kind of gear that men like and want and desire, why it may be virtuous, why it may be a manly thing, and then we jump into a topic.
We've talked about relics before on the show, but we could at least just mention, since you know they're here before us, Dave, what can you just give us a brief rundown of what relics are?
Sure.
The mechanics behind them. What are the rules?
The mechanics.
You know, we're Catholic, okay? Right. Like there are rules, okay?
Right. Yeah. So interestingly enough, right? It's like one of those thoroughly Catholic things that we don't really talk about very often anymore. In fact, most parishes now, they have relics, but no one knows that they're there.
Right.
A lot of times they're stuck back in a sacristy, I mean, or...
They all do, in theory, right?
The altars were supposed to all have a relic stone. Now, that doesn't not necessarily ring true for everybody. But
okay.
But yeah, they were all supposed to have a relic in the altar. And that comes from... relics started because of when Christianity was illegal, right? They were celebrating Mass in the catacombs where the martyrs were buried, and they would literally set up an altar over their bones, right? And then when Christianity became legal, they thought, well, it's fitting, right, that we have celebrating the Mass over the bones of the martyrs, right? The blood of the martyrs is the seed of the church, right? And so they brought those relics up, right? And then that became kind of a very Catholic thing to do. But really, relics are kind of linked to, at least in my mind, to Eden, right? That it's like the power of death has no hold on them anymore, right? Even through their bones, right? God communicates life to us.
Yeah.
And so most of the time they're a piece of bone. The older relics might be pieces of organ or something like that. The newer relics are usually just blood or hair or something that normally comes out. They don't dissect the bodies anymore like they used to.
Why not?
I don't know why, but it had to do with something about respecting the body.
Okay.
So like I think with like Pope John Paul, I think it's mostly just like blood and hair, and those would be first class relics.
Mm-hmm.
And then a second class relic would be something that they owned. And then a third class relic would be something touched to one of those things, right?
So even if it's a second class relic, if you touch something to a second class relic, it still makes a third class relic.
And in fact, I was confused about this, but I heard the other day that even a third class relic can associate another relic. So
I did not know that.
Right.
I mean,
nobody knows.
Is there
about
a like a hierarchy of efficacy when it comes to that? You know,
I don't know. I don't know exactly. I know that. You know, it's like when it comes to using them in spiritual warfare, it usually has to do with the fact that, like, you know, this saint had some kind of relationship to the demonic or something, right? That he beat them or something like that.
Right.
And so they kind of respond in that way. So let's say John Vianney, right?
Or Padre Pio.
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah, it's common. It's almost like watching two rivals, you know, and the one rival's just never, ever won. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is one of those things I think Protestant really weirds out Protestants.
Right.
But there's Old Testament.
You
know, it's in the Old Testament when they throw that dead guy on the bones of Elijah,
and
he comes back to life. I mean,
Saint Paul, the handkerchief
with Saint Paul.
Yeah.
And like they were just trying to get in their shadow, even not even like something, you know, that they own or anything like that, but just like if I just can get into their right. shadow.
Yeah. I'm so holy, my shadow's a sacramental.
Right. Welcome. Yeah, yeah. And even, I mean, the entirety of the Old Testament, like God uses objects to communicate grace, right? Like
right.
Moses' staff,
yeah,
and,
yeah.
know, the serpent and things like that. So it shouldn't be too yeah. much of a stretch.
The ark.
But it is, right. Yeah, yeah right, exactly. Yeah.
Isn't it weird whenever in the Bible when it says that the lady touched Jesus' tassel, that, right. that Jesus felt some kind right. felt something
power
escape
flow
him.
Out yeah. of him yeah
and it's like right. what was that?
I know
that would be so that was so crazy.
I know,
like he, you know, he's still he's fully human, fully divine,
yeah,
but yet he still felt yeah. you know this power coming out
that's
of him.
That's the part that I get tripped up on. It's like you felt the power go out of you and you're omniscient, you know what right. like you knew before you got here this was gonna happen
right. Right.
you know
yeah.
And you're still like, hey, who was that?
Yeah.
Right.
Really, Jesus?
Yeah, right, right, right.
I could find out,
like,
but...
You know all the hairs on my head, but you don't know who it was.
It's going to yeah. take me like 30 minutes.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, right.
There's a lot of people here.
I'll do it if you want, but like, really?
But isn't that crazy? Wouldn't that...
Like, I know. I think about it all the time. Man, it's like one of my favorite stories. And you should, I mean, the idea... Like, if I think if I could go back in time, that would be one of the ones that I'd want to be...
At that scene.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just such an incredible thing. And I think my wife is really what kind of, she loves it and she talks about it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And when she talks about it, I'm like, oh man, I never thought about that, you know? And now it's like, it's just, you know, such a deep mystery, you know, that poor woman.
Yeah. It's like very Jedi Knight.
It is,
you know?
Yeah.
Well, it's amazing that God can use whatever he wants of his creation
right.
to bring up the glory of God, you know, the kingdom of God, you know, however he wants to do it, he can do it.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And it's beautiful. It's almost like people were just longing for the relics, even though they didn't know about them. Right. And it's like I've watched like so many beautiful encounters with people. And I sometimes will bring them to high schools and stuff like that. And it's amazing to see these high schoolers just respond, like, you know, getting on their knees and just experiencing them. And they'll say things like, I think I just felt something, you know, and it's like, you know, and I encourage it, like, yeah, of course you did. You know, mm-hmm. this is beautiful, you know.
So is there a rule of thumb about if you're going to, you know, you have these relics here,
mm-hmm.
You know, what should you be pressing to them? What should you be? What was associating?
Yeah, I guess so. I think I just made that word up, though.
Okay, well, you know, you know, touch something to the relic. You make a third-class relic of your own.
Right.
Because this is a beautiful practice. You should do it if you have the opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, like, if you have a rosary,
right.
do that. I do my scapular,
right.
My miraculous medal.
Right.
And I just did my wedding ring. Is there anything that's like, is there a rule, though, like, don't do your, if you're not going to treat the object.
Right. So that's what I always
sacredly, you know.
Right. So I always tell people, make sure it's something that, you know, you're not just going to throw away, you know, because mm-hmm. this is real now, you know. And I usually tell people not to use anything profane, you know. So they might use like a slip of paper if they have nothing else, but I wouldn't want it to be like a slip of paper from something profane, you know.
Right.
Something
yeah.
like that. I'm certainly not an expert on relics, but I, you know, have you know, asked enough questions of experts, you know,
sure.
to know a
yeah.
little bit about it. So,
okay.
Awesome. Well, we're about to hit a break, but when we get back, we'll jump into maybe spiritual warfare.
Cool.
What is spiritual warfare?
Right.
I think the devil's done a really good job of convincing men that they're not even in a war.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Which, if you're not playing the game, if you don't know you're playing the game,
right.
you can't win.
You're in trouble.
Yeah.
Right.
So,
or to stay away from it because it might put you in harm's way if you enter the battle,
right.
so to speak. Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll jump into that, and then we'll talk about, you know, ways that dads can take their authority and spiritual authority
sure.
to the family and protect them and all sorts of fun stuff. So we're here with Dave Van Vickel. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles, here with Adam Minahan and Dave Van Vickel. No idea what nationality Van Vickel is.
It's Dutch.
Wales?
Dutch.
Oh,
do
what?
You know what? Somebody at the talk last night had the last name Van Vickel.
No kidding.
She said I was the first person she ever met with the same last name.
Dutch.
Yeah, it's Dutch.
Nice.
Yeah. I don't really know anything about it other than that.
Okay. Because I was thinking it's like not quite German.
Right.
Dutch.
Dutch, yeah. There you go.
All right.
Nice.
So you are from Pittsburgh.
Right.
You're here.
He's from Dallas. He's born in Dallas, right?
Grew up in Dallas.
You came here from Pittsburgh, though.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been in Pittsburgh for 9 years.
How is Pittsburgh?
Pittsburgh's awesome,
is
but
it?
The roads are terrible.
I don't like snow. Yeah, right.
The roads are terrible. There's not a straight road in Pittsburgh. You're going to get from 1 mile. Straight. It's like this right here. You're wiggling all around.
Really?
Yeah. It's crazy.
I think the steepest road in the country might be there. I just read that the other day. Yeah.
Sweet.
All I remember.
I like a challenge.
When I was in Pittsburgh, I went underneath this bridge and then it went straight up the road, and on the very top was a Catholic church, at the very top.
And a sharp turn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it was I can't remember what Catholic church it was, but it was bridge, huge steep, right on the top, Catholic church.
I feel like
church.
Pittsburgh is just, the name doesn't make me want to visit there. I don't.
No, but it's awesome. You would love it.
Yeah. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
There's a pretty strong Catholic group there too.
Community. Oh yeah. It's great. Yeah. And there's a lot of young, awesome priests there and everything. And there's a lot happening there now.
Sweet.
Yeah, so it's great. Yeah, Pittsburgh's great.
God be praised. Okay, so we want to talk about spiritual warfare.
Yeah, let's do it.
It's a manly topic because it involves war.
Yeah, right.
But it's not just for women. It's for every... It's like
or
if
just
you,
for men.
If
it's
you
for
want
women
to go to...
Well.
Is that, it, yes, yeah. Thank you. Yes, it's also for women, not just for men.
it's not just for women.
It's for anybody who wants to go to heaven is kind of the way,
right.
the way
a
I think
way
about
to say it.
It.
Yeah.
So what is... Basic level, I always like to define our terms in the beginning.
Right.
What is spiritual warfare?
Right, right. So spiritual warfare is that, classically speaking, right, what the church would say is that battle that we wage between the world, the flesh, and the devil, and us, right, in order to participate in the victory of Jesus Christ that he gives to his church, right? Mm-hmm. So that's like the classical definition, but played out more, personally, right, what you see is that... because of the fall, right, Satan gains some dominion over creation, right? And he claims everything he can, right? So you see this happen where as soon as the fall happens, right, when sin enters the world, then if we fast forward 2,000 years to when Jesus is rushed out into the desert, what does Satan say to Jesus? He offers him not just one kingdom of the world, not just a few people, he offers him all the kingdoms of the world, right? So you see this kind of encroachment of the kingdom of darkness into taking everything they can, right? And that he has claim over all these things. And then Christ comes back to reclaim what is his, rightfully his. And he does reclaim, and that battle ensues. And we play kind of a role in the mop-up battle, in a mm-hmm. sense, right? Because the victory is won definitively on the cross. And then that victory is given to his church and is communicated to us through the church.
Yeah, I like the way you put it in your talk last night, that in a lot of spiritual warfare, you're making a claim
right.
on another person. I think you were talking specifically in the rite of exorcism when you said that, but it made me think of baptism,
right.
And there are exorcisms in the baptism, the sacrament of baptism.
Right.
Different kind of exorcism, but
right. Minor is what we call it. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. But you're still making the, I claim you for
100%.
Christ, absolutely. You know, it's because it has to be done.
Right. And that's the only Catholic, it's frustrating because exorcism has now been understood as like a fringe part of the Catholic Church. But what you just said is exactly how you should understand it, right? The church has the power and the right to claim individuals for Christ into herself.
Mm-hmm.
And exorcism would be a tool to defend that claim. And that's how we should see it. And in the entirety of the church, it's not just the baptism ritual. Everything about the church has claim written into it, right? That I'm taking this person mm-hmm. into me to present to Christ, right?
Yeah. And there's something very Christ-like in that you're not claiming yourself. The church... is coming to your rescue.
Right.
She is claiming you
beautiful.
And pulling you out of your sin because you can't do
right.
it yourself.
Right.
Christ was the one who won the victory. It's his, he's the author behind
right.
and the motivator behind everybody's salvation.
Right.
And so I just really love that. Some of our Protestant brothers and sisters, they think, oh, it should be something that a decision you make,
sure.
who may argue against
it's
infant
all
baptism.
Based on personal faith.
Right. Yeah. But that's just, that's still kind of a prideful stance that. That, like, oh, I saved myself. It was my decision. You know, it's like,
you're just cooperating with what Christ has already given you.
Like, you're still not doing that. Christ, he comes to your rescue.
Right. And that, I mean, we see, you guys know, we see that in the Catholic way, where like the work your way to heaven, kind of an understanding. It's the same thing, you know. Sure. And, but yeah, it is, it's interesting because you cannot separate, I mean, that's the thoroughly Catholic way to understand spiritual warfare. You can't separate the church from it, right? Christ establishes a kingdom. And the kingdom, right, is the rival kingdom to the kingdom of darkness. And so you can't separate those. And so the church, it plays a major role. It's not just our personal faith that saves us from the world of darkness. Mm-hmm. The church plays a role, you know, and that means that priesthood is important. Confession is important. Sacraments are important, right? All these things are very important.
One of the things you said last night that I really loved on your talk, when you're talking about, like, you asked the question, you get asked all the time, what can I do to help?
Right.
And you said the two things that we need to focus on is evangelization and the pro-life movement.
Right.
You know, and I thought, well, that makes sense because evangelizing, if you're evangelizing everybody else, you know, you're growing the body of Christ, you're growing the kingdom,
right?
Which I don't know. I just never really thought about, okay, how can I help an exorcist or how can I help in spiritual warfare? The first thing that comes to mind isn't, in my mind, evangelization.
Of course, right. But it's a super aggressive act. So, you know, like the fancy buzzword for Catholic evangelists now is the kerygma, right? Which is a proclamation. But a kerygma is a proclamation of a battle being won, right? I mean, originally in the ancient world, that's why you would hear a kerygma proclaimed, right? A good news, because the emperor was telling everybody, hey, I got another place for us. I got another kingdom for us. So it's a very aggressive act. And in fact, it's one of the easiest ways to tell if someone is struggling with these extraordinary attachments to evil is to just kind of proclaim to them the kerygma and see what the response is, because demons hate it, right?
Yeah,
totally.
So why the pro-life movement? Evangelization, right. I understand, pro-life movement.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Right, yeah. So, and I say this often, right, that the devil loves blood, death, right? That the devil deals in death. That's what in the end, he always wants to be worshipped. And in the end of that worship, he wants to be worshipped with human sacrifice. And so in some places it's codified in religion, right? Like you see that in the Aztec world, before Our Lady of Guadalupe destroyed the evil kingdom, right? But in today's society, you see it in a forced secularism, right? Where, I mean, clearly Planned Parenthood is probably the most evil organization that has ever existed, you know, and whether we are doing it to worship Satan or not, this is all part of his plan, right? He wants blood. He wants
an innocent blood.
Right.
You know, exactly. It's innocent blood.
Exactly. And it's a clear, I mean, there's no question. It's a clear mockery of the cross, right? An innocent person gave his life. And so in this case, we're taking an innocent person's life for some sort of freedom, you know.
Quote. Right.
So
would you say that the attitude of resignation is, you know, does that underline all of spiritual warfare? Just that I totally resign myself to the will of Jesus Christ?
So that it is very clear in the lives of the saints that that is the secret, right, to everything, right? That my kind of obsession is female mystics, which is funny because I'm on the Catholic Man Show, but is female mystics and their relationships to the devil.
I'm the same way.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when you study the female mystics and their relationship to the devil, it's like watching spiritual warfare from like, it's like studying boxing from Mike Tyson, right? Oh, like this is the way boxing was supposed to be.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so it's very clear.
They're
right?
So receptive.
They are exactly right. They're receptive. And so that is exactly what the devil is going to try and destroy, right? That receptivity. And what you'll see is just, you know, the idea that resigning yourself to God's will, regardless of what happens to you. I mean, that's the trick. You know, you might still get pummeled, right? And I think that that's where people kind of get off the bus.
Right.
But yep,
picking up the cross and following him is not fun.
No, it's not. It's not a fun thing. And I think people think, okay, well, I'll resign myself to God's will and then everything good's going to happen.
Right.
No, that's not necessarily true.
This is not health and wealth.
Right.
Yeah.
What you know is that resigning yourself to God's will keep you safe, right? Uh-huh. For eternity. And that's the underlying secret. And a personal faith does, I mean, that's what we mean when we say a personal faith fights the devil, right? We're talking about a daily lived
you know, response to the gospel, where we are continually subjecting every second even to God's grace, and knowing that we can't live the next second without God's grace.
You know, you just said, keep you safe. And that makes me think in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, the siblings ask the beaver about Aslan.
I love that part. That's my favorite part.
Is he safe? Because he's a lion. And the beaver says, safe.
Who said anything about
safe? Of course
he's
not safe. Right. But he's good.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a t-shirt that I sell that has that quote on it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Are you kidding?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it's like, that's, you know, many times Christ calls especially certain individuals to a life of what might outwardly look like incredible suffering, and it maybe is a life of incredible suffering, but there is a reward for that individual in that suffering of joy and peace. I mean, there are victim souls throughout history who have been called to bear the cross of even possession.
Oh yeah, right.
And
holy
so
demoniacs,
people
right?
people might think that, oh, if I give my life, I'll be safe from possession. It's like, well, you'll be safe and perfectly where God wants you to be, and that is really the most important thing.
Right.
In fact, a lot of the saints even said, like, when they stopped suffering, they didn't like it because they didn't have anything to offer offer Christ,
that's
which is like that is next level.
Hashtag Mother Angelica.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, we'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. Talking about spiritual warfare today with Dan Van Vickle, asinnersguide.com, or is it The Sinner's Guide? Is it A Sinner's?
Yeah, The Sinner's Guide.
TheSinner'sGuide.com is where you want to go. Book him for your next. The Lenten missions are coming up.
Are you booked? Come see me. I'm booked. Yeah,
I bet
Lent is rough. Yeah.
Yeah. But summertime would be good.
Yeah.
Fall, whenever.
October, that's when everybody books. I book every single night of October. Isn't that
funny? That's because of Halloween and All Saints Day.
Right.
So a lady came up to me yesterday, said when she was a little girl, the priest had a beautiful reliquary, all these relics. And on Halloween, they would do a procession with the relics.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That is a great idea.
That's what I said.
Right.
That is the best idea.
Right.
That's what you should be doing on Halloween.
Acculturation of the gospel. Yeah. It's beautiful.
And so if you are at a parish that has a reliquary,
ask your pastor,
ask now, because if you ask a week before Halloween,
it won't happen.
Ain't going to happen.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But
that'd be epic.
Put it in his mind now. Sacred Heart in Miami has an incredible reliquary.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you guys know, in Pittsburgh, we have this place called St. Anthony's Chapel.
Okay.
And it has the most relics outside of the Vatican.
Wow.
No kidding.
It's insane. Yeah. It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was in Pittsburgh not too long ago. Are you close to Allentown?
Not really.
Okay.
Not really.
Okay.
I'm there all the time because I work with Dirty Vagabond Missions. And now they're just called Vagabond Missions. And
okay.
I'll get in trouble for that. And they have a place in Allentown. So.
Okay.
Right.
All right. Okay, so we're talking about spiritual warfare today. One of the, you know, it's interesting because everybody jumps to exorcisms whenever we talk about spiritual warfare. Like, that's like the go-to. But what people don't understand is it's very hard for any kind of manipulation from the devil if you're living a sacramental life. Last night you were talking about, one of your main goals in exorcisms is to make sure they get to confession, to try to get them back into a sacramental, a prayer life, a life within, like, to be able to receive Christ's graces again.
Right.
So I think a lot of times people like throw this idea of exorcisms way up here.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Instead of like, no. The sacraments that Christ gave the church to institute, like, you know, the confession's where it's at.
Right. Yeah. Because it's the difference between a sacramental and a sacrament, right?
Right.
A sacrament, is Christ, he communicating himself to us from himself, right? A sacramental is kind of like using that mediation in a sense, right? And the power comes from the blessing of the church. So you could not add up enough exorcisms to equal a confession, right? It's not possible to do that. You couldn't have a million exorcisms and say that equals one confession,
right?
Because God is infinite and gives himself to us in the sacraments. So it's one of the very first goals that we do. And it's also the remedy to not ever having issues like with the demonic attachments, right?
Yeah.
Is that living a rigorous sacramental life. And in particular, if you understand that what Satan is always trying to do is push us into the fall, right? Then what we're trying to do is get back to Eden, right? And so like in the fall, right, when they hide themselves because of their nakedness, right? What do we do in confession? We expose ourselves, right? In an awkward sense, right? But yeah. We expose ourselves, right? And we are going back to Eden in a sense to that original intimacy with God. And Satan has a very difficult time dealing with people who are regularly subjecting themselves to the sacraments.
Yeah, because Satan and the demons, they would just destroy us if Christ didn't prevent them.
Right.
I mean, the only reason they don't just come kill all of us immediately is because Christ stands between us. So right. The state of grace and remaining in a state of grace is the number one
right.
spiritual warfare thing that you can do.
Right.
I mean, I think people often, spiritual warfare, you know, it's like, yeah, say the... Like, if you can get this old prayer, yeah. because this prayer is so old, always, you know, it's always, like it's more always. Powerful or something, or it's like, no, just, you know, just be holy.
Right.
And make your family holy.
Yeah. Live a life of virtue. Right. Practice your, you know, live out your vocation.
Right. Yeah. And you know, I said that last night about, you know, evangelizing and doing pro-life work, fighting the devil, but for God's sakes, have a bunch of children, right? And teach them that. To live a life of holiness, that is going to conquer evil more than anything. You know, Satan hates families, and in a lot of ways, like family is the remedy to a satanic isolation. Right? In the Gospels, when Jesus encounters the Gerasene demoniac, right? Remember when he heals him, the Gerasene demoniac wants to go with Jesus, and what does Jesus say? No, go back to your family.
Right? Yeah,
I mean it's a beautiful little expose on what the family is. With regards to Satan, right, and with regards to the spiritual battle, it's important, right? The family's mm-hmm. important.
So, as men, we have the office of fatherhood,
right?
So, maybe give us a couple tips that you think to be where we can exercise our office for our wife and for our children.
Sure. So, the first thing is in your teaching office, right? That your children and your wife need to be taught, right? That hopefully your wife understands this already, but your children need to be taught that first of all, God is not angry at them, right? And that's a big thing, right? For the devil. The devil, the very first step he's always going to take in drawing someone away from God is to mess up the way they think God sees them. And so they're going to start to push him away from God's mercy, thinking that, well, my sin's too great for his mercy, or right. he's angry at me. So if you can teach them that, then teaching them about baptism, it is very rare that someone would be severely attacked by the devil if they understand baptism, right? Because, and in fact, in a lot of cases where someone is authentically attached to evil, like in an extraordinary way, I'll say, were you baptized? And they'll say, yeah, but then I did it like a ceremony when I was 14 and I unbaptized myself. And I'll say, well, I don't think anyone told you about baptism because mm-hmm. it's not a contract.
Because you can't do that.
Right. You can't unbaptize yourself. It's a covenant. Right. It's not possible. And literally, I can honestly say that oftentimes that's enough for them to be healed. Just that firm knowledge. Right. Truth is the first exorcism. You know. Uh-huh. So teaching your children that. But then also operating in your priestly role, right, as father of the house, right, blessing your children and blessing your wife is a firm way to protect them from evil, and we see this all the time. It's funny. Sometimes you'll see an exorcist bless a demoniac and nothing will happen, and you'll see that exorcist bless the father of the demoniac and they go crazy,
right? Really?
Because when fathers are engaged, right, in the battle. There's the big problems happen, right? Big problems happen. Yeah, it is. It's very, and their mother as well, but especially the father, they'll go crazy because they know if that father engages, their time is
because it's all about authority,
right?
And
right.
does that happen more if it's like a generational thing? Like, is that more likely to?
Well, it wouldn't necessarily have to be that way.
Okay,
no, it could certainly be an issue, but it certainly wouldn't have to be that way. If a father's engaged in the faith in the family. The devil is going to have a hard time with that family, you know,
totally.
The father's engaged in the faith just because of the fact that right, he has that spiritual authority over his family. And so you'll see that it's a pretty common thing. I don't know if anyone else has noticed it, but I've clearly noticed that, you know, you can see a big reaction when they go after their family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because as the father, you are the initiator of the gift.
Right.
You know, you are the primary source of life in the house. And so you fulfill an important role.
Right.
And the natural and the supernatural are are linked.
Right.
You know, if we have a natural role, that natural role spills over into our supernatural role.
Sure, sure. I think going back to what you said about the state of grace, you know, I would like encourage dads to think about what it would be like if they had some kind of disability. Like, you know, all these soldiers who come back from Iraq and they have some kind of disability, and it's difficult for them to care for their family.
Mm-hmm.
Think about that as the state of grace, right? Like, if you're not in the state of grace, in a certain sense, you have a spiritual disability to care for your family, even though you don't see it, right?
Right.
And so it's a big problem here because, you know, especially with pornography and these kinds of things that are secret sins that you don't think are hurting anyone, spiritually, it's kind of folding up the umbrella and letting, you know, come what may, you know, in a sense.
Yeah. You're no longer standing in the way between them, just like Christ stands in the way between us and the demonic. We
absolutely
stand in the way between the demonic and them, in as much as our office authorizes us to. I mean, it's still Christ ultimately who does everything,
right?
But he uses us for that role,
right? And I think that there's no issue with that, right? Because Catholics don't understand mediators as a hurdle. We understand them as a way, you know, as a pointing the way. And so the Father is, in a sense, a mediator. And so that's why it's really important. And I want to stress also that focusing on defense is a bad strategy. You know,
right.
Get your family engaged. That's what you want to do. Mm-hmm. Right. Like my kids know a little bit. I mean, they don't know what exorcism is, but they know a little bit about, you know, like dad's fighting the devil or something like that. Right. And I'll say to them, like, well, when we go to Planned Parenthood to pray, that's when we're really fighting the devil. I want them to engage in the battle. And I'll say to my kids, like, if they're afraid or something like that, I'll always say, no, the devil's afraid of you. Don't you worry. When you wake up in the morning, you tell the devil you got 5 seconds and I'm coming after you.
Yeah, if you
right?
could see the guardian angel standing behind
right.
you.
Yeah, right. Right.
You'd
don't
be
worry.
Just fine.
Don't worry. Right, exactly.
He's terrifying.
Yeah.
Jude the other day said, Dad, I want to punch the devil in the face. And then he started saying the Hail Mary.
Yeah, that's
and I was
awesome.
Like, I'm not sure how you learned that. Like, I thought you may have said something to him or something, but no. I wasn't sure how he got that. But anyway,
yeah.
You just said something. Oh, we're getting close to the time, but I do want to talk about the importance of developing a relationship with your guardian angel and how they can help with the spiritual warfare, because that's such a gift that Christ gave all of us. Everyone has them.
Right. And we don't talk about it.
And we don't talk about it enough.
Yeah. We don't talk about
our buddy Juan, if he was here, he would be like coming out of his seat because
he went to Opus Dei.
Such a big fan of, you know, developing and cultivating the relationship with your guardian angel.
That, like,
thing that he gets excited.
I can't do that.
I know. But yeah, I think that's an important role that a lot of people, you know, when you pray the guardian angel, my angel of God, my guardian dear, you know, sometimes it feels like it's such a kid prayer.
Right.
You know, it's like,
right. Yeah, there's an adult way to have that relationship. Sure.
Yeah. So when we get back, let's talk about that and then whatever else Dave wants to talk about.
We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass. Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. This is David Niles here with Adam Minahan and Dave Van Bickel. Dave is a permanent fixture on the podcast, Every Knee Shall Bow.
Yeah.
You do with Gormley.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been great so far. We talk about evangelization and discipleship and really whatever else, you know, is involved in that. But it's been great. And
between the two of you, who's holier?
I'm definitely holier.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah.
He's more intelligent for sure.
Okay.
Than anyone.
Yeah. I mean, that sounds like a humble response.
Right.
In the most,
I didn't even have to blink an eye.
No. I mean, it's like, look, it's just the way it is.
Yeah.
He's just not very holy. I mean, so many, just a lot of
vices. Which wasn't that hard.
Yeah. Right.
It's pretty low.
It's a low bar, you know.
So before the break, we were talking about the importance of guardian angels.
Yeah. And it's true what you said. I was thinking about that it kind of is a kiddie thing. unfortunately. People think that, you know, but there is a mature way to have a relationship with your guardian angel. You know, the rule is basically the holier you are, the more your angel's able to interact with you, mm-hmm. right? And we know that they protect, guide, govern, you know, different things that they can do. But cultivating a relationship through prayer, right, devotions to the guardian angels is an easy way to kind of start that journey. And then to ask them for what would be appropriate to ask them for, right? To help you pray better, to help you recognize when temptation's coming, to help you recognize when you're a little bit more tired and maybe can't resist temptation. Those are excellent ways to like kind of grow that relationship in an appropriate way. Mm-hmm. An inappropriate way would be naming them. We know.
I was gonna ask you that. Yeah,
you can't name.
Don't name them.
Right. Yeah. Which is funny that.
Why? Why not?
Because I guess naming expresses some kind of dominion over them.
Yeah, you're taking authority over them, and you don't have authority.
No. Certainly not. But also, there are a lot of New Age movements that like talk about guardian angels as well. It's kind of the vogue thing in New Age, guardian angels. In case
you're kidding.
Yeah. But they
I can't keep up with
right,
the new course. Age.
Yeah, like, don't worry, I'll do it. Don't worry.
It's just like always right. like, new just going crazier yeah. and crazier. Right.
Yeah. But in that relationship, they would be like engaging them in some sort of conversation, either through channeling or whatever they think. And that's not the relationship we're gonna have.
No.
You know? No. And people will say, well, what about Padre Pio? And I say, okay, are you Padre Pio? You know, like are you there yet? You know, like, you know,
talk to me when you have the stigmata and then we'll come back.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
But I can honestly say that people who have devotions to their guardian angels, it's amazing the difference that they experience, right, with regards to spiritual warfare. It really is incredible.
Hmm. You know?
I've heard that you should ask your guardian angel, like, as you're approaching the Eucharist, to have them offer everything that you have to Christ.
Yeah.
That's a great way to do it. Like, because it's also sometimes hard when you're especially juggling kids and trying to make sure they're all in line and everything else.
Right.
It's hard to mentally prepare yourself that you're actually receiving the body, blood, soul, and divinity of our Lord.
Right.
And so to ask your guardian angel to, you know, help prepare and then offer everything that you have to God our Father on your behalf is a good way.
I do that all the time too with evangelization. Like before I'm speaking to a group, I'll invoke their guardian angels, right? Or with mm-hmm. difficult conversations, I'll invoke their guardian angels, right? Because mm-hmm. it is a, you know, a very fruitful practice.
I've done that. Ask my guardian angel to talk to their guardian angels.
Oh, right. Yeah.
It's like, hey.
Yeah,
I know you're buds with.
Yeah, you guys are friends.
Then you have people who, like, somebody came up last night and said, "Well, yeah, like I always like send my guardian angel like on errands." It's like I need to find somebody in a crowd, so I sent my guardian angel. Like, like this is given to you for defense, and you're sending him away. Like, I don't know if it's a good idea.
Bold move.
I've heard people doing this before, and it's not like angels. You know, it's like, oh, my guardian angel, I sent my guardian angel to hang out with, you know, he's like taking care of my dad in, you know, the other side of the country. So he's not here with me. You know,
it's not a
like,
secretary.
Right. They're actually not even here.
Right. Exactly.
They don't have a place, you know, like except heaven.
Right.
You know, they stand before the throne of God always.
Right.
Like their principal role is intercessor.
Right.
You know.
Right. And you know they're not recycled. That's another big misconception, right?
That's like,
that like when you die, right, they're gonna like hand in your file to God and mm-hmm. then like get another one. It's not like that. This is what's so beautiful about spiritual warfare and guardian angels is they were created for you. So like your weaknesses, like they have strengths to fit your weaknesses and everything, and they will protect you throughout your life and then rejoice with you in eternity. I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah. And I've heard that your guardian angels are so devoted to you that they will even accompany you through purgatory should you go that. I mean, it's like, I don't know how we know that.
Right.
But
probably some mystic.
It sounds pretty awesome.
Yeah, right.
I forget the name of the lady who had a vision of at Mass about specifically guardian angels and those who were present who had an intention or a petition for the Mass. Their guardian angels had like this bowl.
Yeah.
That they were bringing up and, you know, laying at the altar. And those who were just kind of showed up with no intention, nothing to pray for, their guardian angels were approaching the altar kind of sad with an empty bowl. Like they had nothing to lay at the feet of Jesus for that Mass. Right. So you should always never forget to have intentions.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, there's so many Catholic prayer hacks,
right?
You know, like Adam and I are doing Exodus 90 right now. So every time I get in the shower, the cold shower,
yeah,
I try to remember like, oh, this is my intention for this shower.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And we just need to do that. We need to.
Oh,
that's,
yeah.
That's how we can live
a mortification,
a more prayerful dude. Life. Everything that we do is now becoming, you know, a prayer.
Right.
Who are some of the saints that are not well known, or maybe blesseds who are not well known, who seem to have powerful intercessories in the spiritual warfare?
Yeah. So, Gemma's starting to become known, right? She's becoming more popular, but Gemma Galgani is, clearly God uses her in a very special way to vanquish evil.
Yeah, I think many people do not know her.
Okay.
I barely know her, really.
She was a victim soul, and maybe even like the quintessential victim soul, you know, even more so in my opinion than Padre Pio. And has this amazing relationship where God uses her to crush the devil, and underwent many exorcisms because of the suffering that she was you know, able to endure. One of the more controversial ones that is Blessed Annalise Michel. Annalise Michel
I don't know her at all.
She is the kind of the poster child for atheists on the internet, because she died while being cared for by an exorcist, and the court actually convicted the exorcist in Germany and put him in prison.
Emily Rose,
yeah.
Oh,
Emily
okay. Rose. Yeah, yeah. They changed it. You've right. seen the movie Exorcism of Emily Rose.
Right.
It's really this lady. Okay,
right.
Yes.
Annalise Michel. And she is a beautiful intercessor and is very powerful. One of my favorites is Blessed Bartolo Longo.
Who's here?
Who's here, yeah. This is Bartolo right here. And they call him the Apostle of the Rosary. And he went through a time of atheism and then got involved in Satanism and was actually a satanic priest. And was so emaciated that one of his professors, who was Dominican, saw him and said, "What happened to you?" And taught him the rosary and led him on this journey to freedom. But he's an incredible intercessor. And he kind of played a role in my life before I even knew who he was. I remember one time walking into an exorcism, and the demoniac looked right at me and said, "Every time he walks in, bad Bart and its beads come in too." And I remember thinking, what is that? You know? And it was like 12 years later that I learned about Bartolo Longo.
Bad Bart is a pretty sweet nickname.
Yeah, right. You know, right. Bad Bart and his beads, like, you know?
Yeah. So, if you're going to pray to Bad
right.
Bart.
Yeah, right. Right. So, yeah, Mother Teresa of Calcutta is a well-known one.
Yeah.
And I think you can just see the poverty, right? Satan hates, you know, poverty.
And humility. I mean, she was very, very humble.
Right, yeah. So those are some of them. A really very little known one is Blessed Maria of Jesus Crucified, who was a holy demoniac as well. And she tends to show up all the time during exorcisms and things like that. Yeah.
I've heard JP too.
Yeah.
Shows up.
Often. Yeah. Very often.
What about St. Philomena?
I don't have any experience with St. Philomena, but I know like... if you read some of the old school exorcism like manuals and stuff like that, they always include her.
Yeah. Saint Therese is
right.
one.
Right, Therese. Know. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, I literally know exorcists who will, the very first thing they say during the exorcism is they demand to know the demon's arch nemesis. Uh-huh. And they ask for their...
If you can get the demon's name, it's a little bit easier to figure all that. And of course, Saint Michael.
Yeah, of course.
You know, like if the person is... liable to get up and run around, you might command Saint Michael hold him in that chair.
Yeah. They do it all the time. Yeah.
And it's funny, like that works.
Right.
It's like, we're not just, we're not just like messing, pretending here.
Right.
Like it works.
Right. Yeah.
When the priest commands.
I mean, that's the beautiful part about, the beautiful thing about studying exorcism and hearing about it is it is like the perfect microcosm of the church, right? Like the communion of saints plays such a role. All these things play such a role. The priesthood plays such an incredible role. And it shines a light on all those things in a way that you can really thoroughly understand why it's present in our church and our theology. You know?
Yeah, the beauty of the body of Christ.
Yeah.
And everybody, beautiful. You know, the hand can't say to the foot, I don't need you. You know, that's what I love about, like, there's so many things about our church that... The more people are in the body of Christ, the more the beauty comes out. And it's like, that's what it's meant to be.
The bulwark of holiness, right?
Yeah. I mean, we shouldn't be televising exorcisms, you know, there's not a show.
Right.
But if the more people know about them, it leaves no room for question, you know.
Right.
You know, because that can be a temptation in everybody's life. You have a moment where it's like, am I just whispering to myself in my closet? Right. Or,
sure,
you know,
sure.
And then, but when you have it, when you see this and you learn about it, you realize this is absolutely real.
Yeah, I feel very blessed in my faith to have seen what I've seen.
Yeah, yeah. Sure.
So we're going to continue a little bit of a conversation. We'll take a break for a second, but then maybe for our patrons, have a quick interview.
Sounds good.
Dave, thanks so much for hanging out with us, man. Yeah, for bringing
great to be on.
All
I
of
hope
our
I
friends.
Get to do it again. Yeah,
yeah, it was a blast. So, oh, also pray for Dave's family
now,
please. Amber, specifically Amber.
Yeah.
So anyway, we're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
And cheers to Jesus.
Redbox Media Programming is brought to you by... A few minutes each day can change your life during Lent. Ave Maria Press offers booklets for daily devotion, reflection, and more from such best-selling authors as Gary Zemak, Greg Kandra, Father Michael White, and Tom Corcoran, and so many more. Looking for Stations of the Cross booklets or books that are perfect for small groups? We have those too. Head over to AveMariaPress.com and use code LENT20 to get 20% off your order today. Looking for exceptional coffee delivered fresh to your door? We have the answer. Our friends at Grim Bean Coffee produce small batch artisan coffee using top tier coffee beans. The coffee is roasted when you order, guaranteeing the freshest coffee possible. Check out Breadbox Roasts, a new line of Catholic-themed coffees available at www.grimbeancoffee.com/Redbox Media. Experience coffee like never before.